Okay. Please join me in welcoming Carrie. Carrie is a writer and blogger. Whenever I get her blogs to my email every Monday morning, I make sure to flag them if I don't have time to read them right away because there's so much value in everything that Carrie writes. Most of all, Carrie is mom to Jack, and Carrie's going to share her experiences and some of her perspective with us today. The topic of today's talk is Autism Today and Tomorrow, an autism mom's perspective. So hearing from Carrie just a bit about yesterday, today, and tomorrow in the life of an autism parent. Carrie, as soon as you're ready.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for having me back again. It's a privilege to be here. And for people who are unfamiliar with our story, I'm married to a man named Joe. He's a dentist. His license plate reads painless because dentists are very funny people. And we have five kids. My oldest is in college. He's 19. Jack is our second oldest. He's 18 and also in a college, a fully supported college program is how I call it, how I refer to it, describe it. Charlie, my middle son, is 17, driving me crazy right about now. My daughter, Rose, is 15. She's 6'1". And my youngest, Henry, is 14. So we have nothing but a house full of teenagers. So the topic really resonates with me because I'm spending a lot of time now as a mother on this in this new season, kind of reflecting on what motherhood was like for me even 5 years ago. So to give you some insight about where Jack is now, he is in a college slash residential program a few hours from us. And it was a difficult decision to send him. He definitely wanted to go. It was a hard program to find. I think what we learned as a family in the last year is that there's not a lot of post high school opportunities for kids like Jack. And he did graduate on time, and we really wanted him to have some kind of a college independent experience. It's a year-round program. He's been there since July, and he's had many, many triumphs. At the same time, we've had many, many speed bumps. So I like the phrase autism, the moment where you stand won't last forever, because when we're in the trenches, it's so easy to assume this things will never change, right? Whether you have a little one with potty training or some behaviors through adolescence, or even where I am right now with this young adult, it's so easy to assume like this is never going to be any different. And my message to young moms and tender dads is that it absolutely changes. Just when you think you can't stand it one more second, things change. They don't always get easier right away. Sometimes they get harder, but they do change. So it is an interesting road for me now, because I do have to really look towards what does Jack's future look like as a young man, as a middle-aged man, and even as an old man. Sometimes I think, what's Jack going to be like at 75? I won't be here, right? It's a question I think all moms consider their own mortality, but I think special needs moms particularly internalize their own mortality. You mentioned the weekly blog. I blog and I post every Monday, and it's typically a really relevant look at our life and what autism looks like in the moment, what my son Jack is doing in the moment. And my idea, you'll have to tune back in because I don't know if I'll definitely follow through, but usually when I get an idea, I see it through, is next week is like, I've never had the honest conversation with my other kids, what the expectation may be for them once my husband and I are no longer here. Like, it's always been kind of a vibration that they'll be involved in Jack's life. But there's very specific things that will have to happen at some point in the next decade. The day before, or a few days before Jack turned 18, my husband and I got what's called guardianship of Jack. So we are currently responsible for his medical and financial well-being. At some point, that will have to transfer to include a sibling in case something were to happen to us. So there's very real and specific aspects to this next season of our journey that make me catch my breath a little bit. It's certainly nothing that anyone ever prepares you for. So A glimpse of Jack today. He is 6'5" and he wears a size 15 shoe. He is at the moment sort of trapped in this blizzard, I call it, of anxiety, obsessive compulsive disorder, and then autism. We tend to go through this every year right around this time, and yet somehow it's like childbirth. I manage to forget it from one year to the next, and I'm always taken by surprise, like, oh, he's sort of, you know, spiraling again. And when this happens, I have to jump into what I call autism management. I'm managing my son. I absolutely loathe that. I don't want to manage Jack. I want to discover Jack. I want to talk to Jack. I want to relate to Jack. And instead, now my days are often filled with, now I'm back to the drawing boards with medication. We're connecting with his team to come up with strategies to help him cope, especially with the obsessive compulsive disorder. We are working him through the day-to-day anxiety that descends upon him kind of randomly. This time it was triggered by 6 months ago when he left there, he became very, very attached to another student. It was kind of like a crush almost, his first real friend. And the other student was like, I'm not, you know, that I'm not interested in that level of friendship. I just want to keep us acquaintances. And it was kind of the first time Jack's ever experienced rejection in that sense. What I keep coming back to over and over again is that we forget that even kids on the spectrum long for relationships. They long for intimacy. They are sexual people. You know, and Jack's certainly struggling with those pieces of his life right now. And with understanding that even though you really like somebody and you like to spend time with him and you enjoy the same activities, it's not reciprocated. And so he's having trouble like backing off of that relationship. Of all the things I anticipated when I expected, when we launched Jack into the world, you know, maybe homesickness, maybe he run through a ton of money all at once or get lost in this city where he stays. This was never, ever once on my radar. So it just goes to show you, you can turn every set of circumstances over and over in your brain and hope that you've anticipated everything. And I don't think that that's possible. He does take two college classes at a local college. And just to give you an idea of the space where he is, it's in a he lives in a residential space with 44 other neurodiverse students. There's staff there from 7 a.m. to 11 at night. It's fully scaffolded. He has an academic team. He has a life skills team. He has a social pragmatics coach. And they, you know, create social outings and they do a lot of activities together. And it's just very, very supported. There's very few programs like this in the country. And it is exorbitant, absolutely exorbitant, out of pocket. I believe this is the next right step for him to hopefully launch him to more independent living, you know, a few years kind of down the road. But it's all kind of a gray area right now and all sort of unknown. He's had many triumphs. He's one of those rare kiddos that life skills has never been a problem for him, right? So he can, I knew he could do his laundry. I knew he could get himself to the grocery store and pick out the foods he likes. I knew all of that. It's these nuanced social connections that get in his way time and time again. And we're hoping, you know, to just one foot in front of the other. I was very frustrated about 2 months ago. I had had a bad meeting with his team and they weren't sure they could continue to support him through this rejection phase that he's experiencing. And I the meeting ended and I could have smashed my laptop. You know, it was virtual just like this. I could have just thrown something. And in that moment, I had this real paradigm shift. And it was so vivid to me that I said, we just have to love him through this, you know, because what we were doing wasn't working. And what we were doing was like, Jack, every day on the phone, what are you doing? You're messing you're going to lose everything you worked for because you can't stop interfering with this kid. You can't stop talking about this kid or trying to get this kid to be your friend. You're going to lose everything you covet freedom and the ability to walk and get your own donut in the morning and being part of a group at last. I have been working for 6 months so hard to get him to see if A happens, then B will happen. The truth is he's not capable of that connection yet. I don't know when he will be. You know, Jack is 18 years old, but his spirit is really more like 12. And I keep coming back to the idea that there's a real cost emotionally when your body experiences the transformation of puberty and adolescence and your brain is yet to catch up, right? For Jack, that cost looks like a fixation on taboo, a tendency to ruminate about things other people find uncomfortable, right? You know, he loves to talk about alcohol or death or sex or drugs, things that he's working to make sense of so hard, right? But he does it out loud. And he has made other students uncomfortable with those sorts of like looping and scripting thoughts. But in that moment, I thought, what I have done up to this point has not changed a single thing about how Jack interacts or behaves. So it was coming at a cost to me, the stress of constantly trying to alter his behavior from afar. And it wasn't working. So I wrote an essay about loving him through it. And what that looks like is this, you know, we speak once a day. Instead of me cataloging all the things I heard he did wrong or the team said this, I say, what surprised you about yourself today, Jack? What did you discover that's new about yourself today, Jack? And then I just root from the sidelines. I say, I know you've got this. I know you're a good person. I know you want to be successful. You know, I don't know if it's going to alter the outcome. We're still talking about whether or not he can stay there through the summer successfully. But I know our interactions, his and mine, have an ease to them that they didn't before. And I'm grateful for that because prior to this shift of mine and my husband's, everything was fraught with tension. I was trying to always parent him. Another piece of his independence that I'm working really hard on is something I call untethering. You know, for so long, for 18 years, Jack and I have been a we, right? His frontal lobe is so deeply entwined with mine. His nervous system is so deeply entwined with mine that it's time for us to move from what I call a we to an I. And I even like when I do video, just say I have to become a we to two I's. And what that looks like is, okay, Jack, we gave you, you know, $200 this week for a budget. If you spend it all on Tide Pods, as Jack may do, there's nothing left for the things you really enjoy. It is up to you to make that decision. You know, previously it would be me like, you're not going to want those Tide Pads. You're going to really want, you know, X, Y, and Z. And you said you're going to the movies and this and that. I have to start getting him to come to those conclusions on his own. And to some degree, fail just like we would any other neurotypical college student. You know, the stakes feel much higher when it comes to Jack, but the work is that much more important for him to understand he's capable and strong. And so that's sort of our journey from this point forward. And I'm happy to answer any questions that anybody has. I know you had some that were already prepared. My son is texting me his grocery list right now. This is my youngest son, so my apologies. Let me tell him right now. But can I answer anything?
Sure. I have a couple of questions for you, Carrie, if that's okay.
Of course.
If you look back, right, at your younger self, is there any kind of message that you would have given yourself that you think would have helped you through or that somebody you would have wished maybe that somebody could have given you at that younger age that now as a mother of an older child with ASD, you just know so clearly or you know, you have that frame of mind?
Yeah, talk a lot about that in particular. So thank you. I think looking back, I wish I saw the boy more than I saw the diagnosis. Wish every day wasn't about pushing him through to the next step, social storying him, putting the fork back in his hand. You know, that work needed to be done. And I believe it sort of helped get him to where he is now. But I wish I had more softness about me. You know, I had 5 kids in less than 6 years. I was very overwhelmed on a lot of fronts. I think looking back, I wish I had, you know, smelled his hair more after a bath, or split a cookie with him before dinner if cooking was taking too long, or really met him where he was more often. You know, a very specific example comes to mind. He was very fixated on radios, this in particular, a yellow radio he had had when he was really young and had gotten lost in a move or something. We no longer have it. He fixated on that radio so much, drove me to the brink of insanity. And then one day somebody said, what if you just said, okay, for 15 minutes every day at 5:30, we're going to talk about that radio. I want to hear everything you have to say about that radio. And what do you remember about it? What does it look like when you think of it? What did you love about it? It took me so long to come to that conclusion. If I just gave him some time during the day to be who he was, all that work was still going to get done. And so that's a message I give to a lot of new parents. Also, I get asked a lot, like what service, what therapy really helped Jack get to where he is today. And what should we ask for at the IEP table, right? The IEP table is just, it's the battlefield for everybody. It's the landing ground. It's where success is going to happen. And it is an important space, but it does not all come down to the IEP table. You know, we were trying to raise a whole child, and the whole child doesn't spring up out of a conference room. It comes from, you know, eating together at dinner time. It comes from going out as a family on a walk. It comes from just these little bits and pieces of life that assemble into what I kind of picture as a mosaic of this whole child. We taught him everything we could think of to teach him how to forgive, how to cheer someone up after a bad day, how to get a Band-Aid if somebody is hurt. We wove those lessons all the way in. And I think at the end of the day, it is just a much bigger endeavor than the school and the academic journey.
Wow. That's really amazing, because, you know, his ability to function, and he's at such a nice level of being able to be independent, you know, and be out there, really is a culmination of so much effort on your end, right, as the mother. Mm-hmm. What can you share was important to you when he was young compared to what might be important to you now?
That's a great question. What was important to me when he was young? They're probably not that different. It was important to me that he was happy. And to know Jack is to know he's really not like a happy, happy, buoyant person. He's not this joyful, enthusiastic, you know, he rarely smiles. He's not a laugher. So I had to come to terms with what happiness looks like for Jack. It's not this, it doesn't translate. His emotional pendulum doesn't swing that far and wide, right? He doesn't experience like elation or over the top happiness, at least visibly. And so I had to, although I still want the same thing, I had to adjust that what happiness to Jack, he wants the simplest things out of life, right? Which is really so beautiful. So Jack has no ego. He has no appreciation for status or wealth. You could tell him you run the biggest bank in the world, it would be almost meaningless. You could tell him you run the department that makes Oreos, and that would be very important to him. But he doesn't appreciate the levels of, you know, that culture in our society places on things. Happiness to Jack is a really good movie, a bucket of popcorn, taking a walk. He lives down by a huge lake. Every morning he starts his day with a walk down by the lake. And then every Sunday he bakes for the entire resident space, 44 people and staff. You know, he starts thinking about what he's going to make on Monday. He goes to the grocery store. He buys the stuff himself. He organizes lists and he lays out all the pans, and that's very meaningful to him. So I've come to appreciate we all feel happiness in different ways. I don't know that answered your question, but.
Right. No, it actually really does. Meaning, as a mother, the most important thing to you is that he's happy, but coming to terms with what happy looks like for him is different than maybe what you anticipated or maybe what your other children experience or show.
Exactly. That's exactly it.
Is there something funny that you could share that happened, particularly because you had a child with a diagnosis?
I mean, my whole life is funny because I have a child with a diagnosis. How much time do you have? I mean, the kid, the things that come out of this kid's mouth, my most memorable memories, I was in Target talking to like a neighbor or something, and he filled the entire cart with condoms and Preparation H. I don't know what people thought goes on at my house that I needed both of those things simultaneously, but that is a very funny memory. He is, you know, he's hysterical. We have a group family chat. He's hysterical in it without even meaning to be. He just texted me last night all the people, you know, all the Oscar winners he predicted would win. And then today, which ones he was wrong on, you know. I had a hysterectomy about, it's almost 4 years ago now. So he'll tell anybody that's standing there that I don't have a uterus anymore. He's very, very brutally, brutally honest and abrupt. And that translate to me is very, very funny at times.
What part of your journey gives you the proudest feeling? Is there something that you did that you feel like really is, you know, a feather in your cap for what you did for Jack?
It's not about Jack. The first thing when you asked that, literally, I wasn't even thinking. It just came to me like that, is that I'm still married. Because, wow, we have weathered some stuff, right? And people don't love this concept when I post about it on the main page, but I'm true to it. And I believe I am a wife. We are husband and wife first, and we are parents second. We always, to the best that we could, put each other first. And we came, found ways to come back to each other time and time again. And we've been married, it'll be 25 years this year. That included marriage counseling when we needed it. That included choosing to spend time alone together because it boosted us as humans, and choosing to see one another even when we were very lost to each other. And those stormy days were there. And I always say, you know, nothing is real until I tell it to Joe. Nothing matters to me until he knows about it. And that's the phrase I come to when I am so frustrated, because we do not always see eye to eye on Jack. We are actually just coming off of a big disagreement a few weeks ago, because Joe's kind of like, I don't know if this is the place for him. And I'm like, I'll die before he doesn't go through this program that I looked for months, that I finally found and we got a little funding for. And, you know, we come at autism in a much different way. We're very different parents. We were raised very, very differently. I think it's some kind of modern miracle that we're still here. And I love him fiercely, fiercely. So that's my feather in my cap.
Good for you. That's great. And there's so much stress that really comes and plays itself out as everybody goes through their own ability to cope and the own, I guess, the way you deal with stress, right? So if you're not dealing with it the same way, it really can butt heads.
Yeah.
Is there a hope that you have for Jack's future that you would like to share?
Oh, well, I hope, I have my own hopes, you know. I would love to see him get an apartment. And he's had a job. He held a job when he lived here for 3 years. I know he can work. I know he's a very, very good worker. I hope we can put all the pieces in place for him to continue where he is in this city where he is, because he loves it, and just start to build a life for himself. Most importantly, my husband hopes this too. I just hope one day somehow we can free him from the way anxiety binds him. I mean, it is a tremendous constriction on his life. And I hope one day we can find a way to free him from that.
Wow. That's huge. And I really think that every parent at the end of the day wants to see that their child can be independent, right? Mm. Hold down a job, live independently, you know, do the things that everybody does in a routine kind of way, even if there's not anything past that, but just that stability of having a life, having friends, having colleagues, going to a job every day, going to the store, taking care of your needs, you know, just the beauty of independent life, right? And being able to come to visit and be supportive, but not from the inside, rather from the outside.
Yes. I have a phrase, how can I take more of myself out of this? I don't want to be involved in the day-to-day. I don't want to manage a man. People may say that's selfish. I know what my limitations are.
Right. And I don't think that that's coming across as selfish. I think that's forward thinking, right? So it's hard. Mm. It's hard to take yourself out of it because you've been in it for so long and you kind of know him better than himself, right? You know so much about him. You can almost, you know, predict his emotions and his responses to so many things. You definitely are a role model for so many people, and your words touch people really in a very, very true and honest way. Can you put into words some of your thought process when things, you know, hit you, or when you have especially great challenges, or when something comes up that was completely unexpected, like the challenges you just went through with him and are still ongoing, right? Until things are completely settled and he's, you know, exceeding everyone's expectations. Is there something that you can share about the way you think when these challenges arise?
Well, what I learned recently about myself, and this has been very important, is that I wouldn't have said this about myself, but I'm a catastrophizer. My husband didn't think that was a real word. It is. I catastrophize. So I have a bad team meeting with Jack and I, or his team, and I immediately start to spiral. He's going to get kicked out. He'll have to come home. He doesn't drive. I'll be driving him everywhere. He's not happy here. I go right to the nth degree. Now that I've identified that about myself, I realize I really do it with a lot of other aspects of my life. I'm a big runner. I run pretty much every day. It's a very important aspect of who I am. I felt the tiniest twinge in my knee the other day. Like could have been, I'm 48 years old. I'm probably going to start feeling twinges in every part of my body soon. I immediately was like, what if I can't run? What do I do then? I come up with so many ideas when I run about what I'm going to write about. I'm much calmer if I run. So I'm really just trying to be curious about watching my brain as it jumps to the next level when it doesn't need to. And that helped me when I did get a piece of a bad news, not bad news, but about another teenager who's just giving me a run for my money, right? He was late past curfew and sort of pushing, you know, blowing us off and this and that. And it was like, oh my God, he's going to be out. Who knows where he is? He's probably drinking or whatever. And I had to just really rein myself in. Like, not everything needs to be a 10. Sometimes it's just a teenager being stupid and taking too long at Chipotle. So I'm working on that part of myself.
Wow, that's amazing, because you're really, really in tune to your thought processes, right? Being able to be aware of how you're always thinking of, you know, 10 steps ahead of what could go wrong.
Yeah.
And that awareness really helps you like almost plan like, okay, I know my mind is going there, but that doesn't mean that's where it is today.
Yeah.
I just want to share from the chat. Thank you, Nicole, for sharing some examples to reduce anxiety, aromatherapy, baking, leisure activities, roll-on oils, lavender, lavender satchels, candles, breathing techniques, EFT, photography, mediation, maybe that was meditation, yoga, poetry, art, painting, drawing. There's so many pieces here. And I think that that almost brings, you know, the concept of having a hobby, right? Having something else that you enjoy that can take your mind off of the pressing matters that are just a lot.
Absolutely. Is that what you were going to ask? Sorry.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if there's something particular that you do for relaxation or comfort, or that you find particularly helpful that you would share with others.
Well, I am a big yogi. I take yoga very regularly. Absolutely recommend that. Yeah, I've always been intentional about carving out some space for myself. I think I had to, because, you know, I had Jack, but I had all these other little kids too. And it was too easy to get completely consumed by them. I give a lot of thought to the concept of identity because I believe identity drives habits and behaviors. So there's a lot of school of thought on that, right? Like there's a concept called, it's difficult to capture, but it's called be, do, have, right? So if you say, oh, I want to be fit, I want to be really in shape. Maybe that's your goal, or it could translate to anything. We'll use that. You have to act like a fit person. You have to do the things fit people do. For example, you have to already identify as a fit person, right? So you have to be a fit person, and then you're going to do the things the fit person does. You buy good sneakers, you make a playlist, you organize your morning routine around a workout, and then you have the fitness. This applies to anything. You want to be wealthy. You have to act the way wealthy people do. They invest, they research money options. They look for a passive income. You do all those things and hopefully you land yourself with some wealth. So I believe the power of identity really drives our lives in beautiful ways. And it's important for us moms to consider, of course, we're mothers and wives, but what other pieces of ourselves do we want to grow and build? And what's the best way to do that? We deserve a rich, full life also. I think it's easy to assume we are in service of others all the time. And I don't believe that has to be the case.
I love that concept that you really took that time for yourself to develop things that you enjoy. Mm-hmm. I think also that really helps when the going gets tough, you still have something that anchors you, right? You have something that you enjoy that you can reliably do and go to, or, even that concept of identity, right? So it doesn't affect who you are, even when there's a challenge. So you still remain that person who you want to be, which is huge.
Yeah, in many ways, it's like my toolkit, right? It's a bad day, but I know there's going to be a run in it. I'll know I'm a big reader. At some point, I'll read my whatever book I'm reading. I don't read anything about autism, by the way. And I don't really read any like get leaner, stronger, faster, or anything self-help. I just read memoirs and fiction.
That's good. That's again, right? Something that you enjoy, that you take time out for yourself, that just helps you, be you as a person, as opposed to being 100% in service of others. I want to open the floor to our attendants if anybody has any kind of questions that you want to share with Carrie at this point.
Don't be shy.
Okay. If you don't feel comfortable, that's fine as well. We will be making this audio available. We will send it to you via email in the next little bit. You can feel free to pass it along to anybody and everybody who can benefit, who might appreciate Carrie's words. I do want to tell you a little bit about Mastermind. I'm Adina. This is Razi here as well. We're both owners of Mastermind, which is an ABA therapy company. We provide ABA therapy to kids on the spectrum in New York and New Jersey. We're both BCBAs. We've worked with kids with autism for a long time, and we felt very passionate about helping kids in their own homes. So our ABA therapy is in-home primarily, exclusively in-home ABA, so that parents can watch and see the progress, have a say, right? Like it's happening in your own house and you have to feel comfortable with it. So that's really what we do. You can always reach out to us if you have any questions. If you want to have a free consultation, you can just reach out to us. You can look us up. I'll put our information here in the chat. I see that Belinda put in the chat, just wondering why Carrie doesn't read about autism. Carrie, can you answer that?
Yeah, of course. Belinda, I also don't like people recommend, Love on the Spectrum as a show. And I have seen that. Reading for me, I have been a reader since I could read. I read a lot is what I'm saying. And it's my entertainment, and I don't want to immerse myself back into the autism world all the time. I think it can become really draining when that's the only material you sort of consume. So I just make choices that reading is my space where I just want to purely like delight in someone else's story. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for sharing. Thank you so much for your time, Carrie. I really appreciate everything that you shared. And I'm sure that the Everybody else appreciated it as well. Again, we're going to send out a copy of this recording so that you can benefit and pass it along to anybody else who you feel might benefit from it. Stay tuned. We like to host parent events quarterly, so we will send out information to you at the next quarter for another free parent event. Okay. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day. And thanks so much for joining us.